Greetings, I am Jim.
And I am Sean, and we welcome you to our podcast.
Our goal is to entertain you with our discussions about RPG, fantasy, and everything in between.
Come sit by the fire. You're safe here. We'll keep watch. We hope you enjoy 13-Sided Die.
Level 3, Episode 29. Three wizards, Sean, Jim, and Chris, in one room. That's right. Jim and I chat with our lore master about Ardcon and our trip to the mountains. For some fun, we create a random encounter from old D&D manuals. All this and more in our latest episode of 13-Sided Die.
Hello, adventurers. Excited for a special edition of 13-Sided Die. It's Sean here with my good friend...
Epic Jim. And our good friend...
Chris.
Yes.
Woo. The lore master.
Yes. I don't know. I couldn't be more excited right now. This is such a great thing. We are literally in the Dwarven Mountains of Hinton in Epic Jim's Fungeon, the three of us together in person.
Yeah.
The Fungeon. Whoever thought it would come to this?
Well, I mean, I'm down here all the time, but yeah, to have you guys down here, it's pretty sweet.
It's so exciting. We were just saying that, like, you know, it's only been like 3-4 years or something, probably, since this has all kind of come together.
Since the outhouse build of whenever that was.
Yeah, so that was, when was that? That was when 21, I guess?
Maybe.
21?
Yeah.
You two goofs were doing a live broadcast on Instagram of the outhouse. Building an outhouse out of pink foam.
Yeah.
And that was my first...
You built along with us.
Yeah.
That was so cool.
And the rest is history, as they say.
And our dumbasses, we never even thought to advertise it as like a, hey, come build with us. We're just like, come watch us build. Like, that could be fun, right?
Yeah.
And then Chris said that he was like, hey, check this out. I built along with you guys. We were like, what? Someone built along with us? So, yeah.
And we're just saying, I mean, a lot of that happened during COVID, and we're not doing a pro-COVID talk. But I do have some very beautiful memories of that period of time, and getting to know you guys so well was certainly one of them. It was just great to, I think the internet during that period brought a lot of people together who were very secluded, which was really cool. And like I said, who would have thought the three of us be together in a room doing this? It's so cool.
Oh, this is wild. Just finished ArtCon.
Yep. Yeah. Amazing.
Pretty exciting.
Yeah. Our good friend, like you said, Chris, flew all the way cross country to come out here for ArtCon, which is just insane.
There was nothing else. There was no other choice. This is it. You're stuck with me for...
forever.
Forever.
Awesome. Yeah, it's the second year in a row you've done that. That's amazing. Yeah.
I'm fortunate to be able to, be able to scratch together the funds and to be able to do that. And yeah, it's super, I really look forward to that time of year.
And this time we got to have a bit more of a stretched out period too. So you've got to have a bigger holiday out of it, which has been fantastic.
Yeah, my partner came out with me and we made a whole thing of it. And this is another, awesome part. So not only do we get to attend ArtCon and also moderate the last episode, but also come up with Sean to visit Jim.
Yeah.
At home in the Fungeon. I mean, we've all seen everybody anyone who listens to this podcast has seen Jim's Fungeon and all the amazing work and time and things that he's put into it, and it really completely lives up to the...
It's more amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's stunning. You've done a great job, Jim.
Thanks, guys. That's pretty sweet down here.
And he walked our asses all over the world in the last couple of days.
Oh,
yeah. We've seen so much.
I had to show you everything in the mountains. I don't want you to miss anything. So.
If you're ever up in this area of the woods, check out Jim's tour. It's amazing.
Yes. Yeah, he really brought us to many of the most amazing sites, and he took us to some of the places that were off the beaten track, and that was really, made a huge difference.
That lookout today, you call it what, the
edge of the world.
Edge of the world. It was like we kind of went through the forest a bit, and also we came out to an area of the kind of stone looking out of a huge valley, and we're like on mountains, and it's just epic, epic, epic. And it just makes me think of, like, pioneers coming through, or, explorers, and someone walked through that woods one day and did that same thing and saw this crazy big valley in front of them. How amazing was that? And you get that little glimpse of that feeling the first time you do it, right? Like, that was beautiful.
And that too, like, I get so fantasy inspired, like doing this kind of stuff. Seeing the mountains and the valley, I'm just like, oh, what kind of town would I put in there? Yeah. And like, why does that mountain look like that? And just,
yeah. Yeah, it's real. Like, I'm with you, Jim. Like, on a normal day, well, I live in the eastern part of Canada, and, you know, there's not too much to inspire you about in the adventuresome sense, you know, living in suburbia. But being out here, just looking outside your door and seeing these mountains and the, you know, even the mist on the top of the mountains, like, it just gets your brain going on it.
Right? What about out your cabin? Is there kind of a foresty feel out that way, or?
Yeah, that's true. But I don't know, there's just something about
mountains
that just do it.
Yeah.
It grounds me, like, honestly. Yeah. Like, it's the closer I get to the mountains, the better my soul feels. I don't know how to explain that more, but
I get that. Yeah, and foolishly, I'm in the city and the mountains are like about an hour away, and it's just rare we even go. It's so silly because it's right there. But yeah, it's tough. You got to find the time.
Yeah.
No, this has been amazing. I was actually almost overloaded. Like, we've seen so much in the last couple of days. Like, I'm just trying to pull through it all in my head of what we, you know, what we did. It's been great.
And we saw a bear.
Saw a bear today, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was one of the main goals of the vacation, was to see a bear. And
Mrs. Ardnor has lived, grew up in Calgary. She's a resident Calgarian, which is quite rare, and has traveled a lot, but has never seen a bear in the wild, which is crazy. And so she was very excited to see that bear today. Yeah. Now, we should say it was from the safe confines of our vehicles and all that kind of stuff, but that was really cool.
And now that we're back safe home, I can say that I took them to spots where I've seen bears before, not in a vehicle, but it's all good. We're all back and we're all safe.
Yes, everyone was very safe.
Yeah, that last lookout point, Mrs. Ardnor was a little bit stressed going through that because it was a bit back woodsy feel. It was kind of fun. But
that's the adventure stuff, you know?
It is. Yeah. Well, that's it. You know, that's the other thing. Like, you can imagine if you were that adventure and you're kind of forward going on, and you're like, you're tired, and you're kind of hoping to put up camp for the night, and all of a sudden, the thing opens up, and there's this massive, huge cliff and a big valley below you. It's like, oh, damn, I got to go around this thing. Like, how insane that kind of, those early settlers, how hard that would have been.
Oh, yeah.
Very insane. Well, thank you, buddy. That was a really, really amazing couple of days.
Yeah. Next time, it'll be more chill. Now that you guys have seen the main stuff, it can, you know.
Yeah.
Next visit can be a lot more chill.
Yeah, maybe next time we spend more time down here gaming and fiddling around, right?
Well, we saw a lot of terrain, which is what I think is really interesting to me. Like, we're talking about the mountains, but those parts of the mountains are through, like, where it was all that sand, like a sand beach.
Mm-hmm.
And from where I am, about 5 hours away, like, we don't have a lot of that. So that was really interesting for me to see how much that changed. And then another part would look almost like kind of like that, where you'd feel a tundra would look like, or that kind of, like, you know, looked like
spongy ground.
Yeah, almost. Right? Like that kind of look. Grass, where we saw the big bighorn sheep, nice green grass going through there. It's just been so many different things. And today, going through the Jim took us to an area with this huge big waterfall, and not kind of like the, you know, jungle waterfall, like this is just this huge raging river that rips through the earth. And it was an area of it where it doesn't go anymore, and you could walk through all these parts that have been cut, the stone cut away by the water. That was just crazy. And like you were saying, we should, pictures for terrain building, it was just beautiful looking stone.
Yeah, but I think if you built terrain like that looked like that, it wouldn't look good, because it doesn't look real.
No.
Yeah.
it's so rare, but yeah, it's beautiful.
True. And I think yesterday too, the we went to that cemetery,
mm-hmm.
and I still can't get over that tree, a couple of trees growing on these old stone stairs. That looked very fantasy to me. Like, that was so cool, right? Like, it just is so obtuse to see stone stairs of trees growing out of them. It was really cool.
Because where was that old town from? 1926
or something?
Yeah, that's right.
When it was,
yeah. It's just an old town that's just like...
Yeah, it was, an old mining town, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And basically the area was I don't want to say evacuated, but they... ran out of funds in 1926.
And so weird.
So there was like a school and some houses, and at the end there was a cemetery. But they'd all been deserted, so it was just like what was left.
Foundations.
Yeah, the foundations, basically. Yeah. It was very Blair Witch.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There was a lot of talk about that.
It was like in the middle of the afternoon. Sun was out.
We were okay. Yeah, yeah.
We didn't get too scared.
Yeah. But. Man, that would be scary as shit to be back there at night.
Oh, yeah.
It would really be spooky.
Yeah, what are you guys doing later?
Tell me where you are!
That'd be crazy. No, it was. It's been a great trip. We have so much to take in. It's awesome.
So good to like unwind to after ArtCon.
Yeah, it was a great show. Fantastic.
Went off without a hitch.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of wrinkles in the morning when we first got started, but we all solved that and then just rolled, and it was like perfect. It was like everything went so well. About 100 more attendees, I think, this year than last year. So that's huge.
Awesome.
Exciting. I think, yeah, we all just had a blast. So much fun and so many great memories already.
All the vendors did
well.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, we heard some feedback that the vendors, you know, anywhere from 2 to 4 times the sales, right? Which is fantastic.
For like a little con like this. Yeah. Like,
it's great, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think the trick is that we were very careful in the vendors that we asked to come, and they have the correct wares for the audience that comes. So it's a very, very good paired up match. And so people are very willing to be parting with their funds to buy really cool stuff. So
yeah, and you've done a lot of work to make sure that the vendors are fantasy themed and they're also artisans or art folks, right? So it's not like they're just, you know, reselling junk. You know, sometimes you go to the bigger conventions and you get 10 booths where they're essentially selling exactly the same junk over and over again.
Funko Pops, I'll say it, since you guys won't. Funko, I hate Funko Pops. They're garbage. I don't know how that's an industry, and they just need to be eradicated.
This has been an Epic Gin hot take.
Yeah, I mean, that was always a thing for us. We didn't want it to be very, we didn't want the commercial feel.
No.
We want people with real wares and heart and soul into it, right? And I think it makes a huge difference. And people get it. Like, we heard so many comments about that, just loving everything that was there.
Mm-hmm.
Sean. Oops, sorry, I didn't put the phone on.
Always one episode.
Amateur, yell.
Damn it, didn't put the phone on. Silent. Mrs. Arnor, messaging to my kids, we saw a bear!
It was exciting.
It was. And I just want to mention for a second those young guys at the show. I can't remember. What was the name of their thing? I can't get it. I can't remember. But there was these two young guys. And I think part of it is because they remind me of how crazy I was when I was young. They got in late into the show because we had a cancellation. And they took over the table. And they had some neat stuff they'd worked on, original art. And they were printing stuff. And they had a printer there. And they just kept printing. And they were so excited. So much energy, positive energy from those guys. They were amazing.
Yeah.
Good for them.
I chatted with them about that, and we had our little moment where it's like, this is our first convention. It's like, it's the first time we're selling stuff to a convention. Yeah, that's another big deal. I sold art at ArtCon, so.
Awesome.
Good for you.
I'm officially an artist.
Yes, you are.
Which alarms me, because Mike, a couple episodes ago, said that he doesn't consider himself a real artist. And then I don't know if I'm allowed to say that I'm an artist then.
That's funny.
Artists are their own worst critics, right?
All the time.
Mike, you're an artist. We're calling it right here. You're an artist.
It's hard. And that's the thing. Whenever you're creating stuff, it's the hardest part of doing those kind of things is getting out from your mind's eye, out, you know, what you've seen in your head of what you want to do. And because no one else can see that, you know, I know for Mike, and I'm not trying to talk for him, but I'm sure a lot of times there's people going, that's amazing. I love that. And he's like, and his head's going, no, I didn't get this one part right. You know what I mean? And so instead of enjoying the whole thing, it's that one thing bugs you kind of thing. It's really, it's interesting. Yeah.
I guess it's also the thing that drives people to get better.
Oh, yeah. 100%. Right?
Oh, next time I need to make sure I do this. As long as you don't get too, sorry, go ahead, Jim.
I was just going to say, because he always posts his work in progresses or his whatever his practice stuff, and I'm always like, man, that's amazing, that's amazing. And it's always like, yeah, well, it could be better, like I messed this up. And I'm like, dude, I'm like, what's this? Like, if I could draw that, I would show every single person I knew.
Yeah,
I think I've said it before, I've got a crappy watercolor painting at home that really is just some geometric shapes. It really isn't even that skillfully put together, but I absolutely love that painting because it was one of the first times for me that happened where I had an idea in my head and it turned out exactly as I had seen it. And it was just this feeling of like, oh, wow, that you know, that you got it. And even though it doesn't look that great, it just was what I was seeing. And that was exciting. And I think when you kind of get that happen every once in a while, that's a really fun thing.
Oh, yeah.
yeah, getting to that point.
It's awesome.
Yeah, I've had that bit with like my like tarot card ones, but they're like pretty simple though too.
Right? I like them though. That was very important for me to pick up some of those before the.
Thanks, man.
The show. I wanted to get some, and I got a little mimic fridge magnet. They're awesome.
Yeah.
You had cool stuff at your table. I was really proud of you. You did awesome.
Thanks. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think live and breathe fancy 24/7, so I should have some pretty good fancy ideas. To,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I think about it enough.
We've got obviously a lot of things coming up in the future, getting the fellowship together and talking about ArtCon, kind of enjoying the successes, and we'll talk about some of the things that we thought we maybe could do better next year. We always do that. And we'll reach out to some of the vendors and some of the attendees and see what they thought. But yeah, I mean, quick snapshot for me is I was so happy it went so well, and so great to see everybody and just have a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we didn't actually even talk about the fantastic, well, I mean, we talked about it last episode, but, you know, the mini painting competition, huge, huge success.
Big time.
Right? Yeah. So you had how many people, Jim?
Filled all the spots this year. All 40 were spoken for, but I think only 38 people ended up painting, but still, it was, yeah. Yeah, getting all the paints ready for that, that was pretty chaotic, but thankfully we got a good, solid team, so we got those, and then I bought way too many colors, and you know how it is, but yeah, no, it went off without a hitch, and yeah, it was good.
That's a lot of people to prepare for, right? Like, that's a ton of people.
Derek was so excited, our photographer, because he said he got so many good shots, because usually trying to take pictures of people, they're moving around and making dumb faces and stuff. He said the painters were just locked in and just stone-faced on everything. So he's like, oh, I got so many good shots.
That's so cool. That's awesome. I'm very excited to see his photos.
Over 1,000 of them?
Oh, my word.
Wow. That's a lot of pictures.
I took 50 and I was like pretty proud of myself. I was like, yes.
I literally checked my phone yesterday because we were talking about this, and I think I took 2 photographs the entire time.
That's all I did, yeah. Actually, I swapped with Mrs. Ardnor at her phone because mine had to sit at my table to be a beeper thing for the square. And so I only took one or two with hers as well. But I think I realized as well that, you know what, there's a lot of things going on. Just stay focused on what's going on, because there's we had 2 professional photographers in the building. Like, there's going to be so many great photos.
Well, and you know, it's such a short time, really, out of the year. As much as possible, you want to stay in the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I find if I'm trying to photograph things and stuff like that, it gets me out of the moment. And it was great. The day really just flew by.
I think ironically, even though last year were 6 hours, this year were 9, I kind of almost felt like this year went faster in a funny way for some reason. Like, I just, halfway through the day, I remember thinking, oh my goodness, it's like it's half over. And it was just like, flew by. But I think the first year was a lot of manic panic and just going crazy, and this year was actually getting to experience it a little bit more maybe, and it was lovely. It was so great. Talkers were amazing, the speakers,
the pictures, like, for me, I take pictures of everything. Like, I have, I think, like 28,000 photos on my phone or something crazy. Like, every time I go anywhere, I'm just snapping pictures. But I've never been involved with something that needed like an actual like professional photographer. Now, I never really got it before, you know, like I get for weddings and stuff, but like for events, I was like, why? Like, everyone can just take pictures, and no, we're all out there doing stuff. And like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
But it makes more sense.
Yeah. I think it's going to make a big, it'll make a big difference. Right.
And there's something really cool that, literally being that fly on the wall, like, you know, for us at the show, we're doing things, and so we're heavily involved, we're making sure things are going smoothly. So when we're taking a photo, it's almost like just a quick snap, where that photographer literally stand there for 5 minutes, so they want to get the right photo, because they're right, because they get to, that's their job, is to be watching and to be the eyes on stuff and take the right photo. And that's pretty cool. So I think that's gonna make a huge difference, to have, you know, somebody with a trained eye take the time and get the right shot. It's gonna be amazing. So thank you, Jim. I know you hooked up Derek, that was awesome of you to do that.
Yeah, my pleasure. I don't know how I did it. I still
I don't know how a lot of it happened. Like, we wound up getting a food truck. Yeah. Like, that was a whole thing, right? That food truck mafia thing where it's hard to get one of them. And they're all like rivals to each other. It's crazy. And this just kind of got really fortunate and fell into our lap. And I don't think they got a lot of public, I don't think, went out to the food truck. But I think almost every single vendor went out.
Oh, yeah.
Seemed to be a lot of vendors.
Yeah, I think it was good timing, because the food truck sort of showed up, you know, what, like around 4 or something like that. And I think it quieted down a little bit at the show. And the vendors were all, hadn't eaten since the morning, basically. So, yeah, they all went out and you saw, said a steady stream of the vendors coming back in with the food. And yeah. I think once anyone said another, you know, a vendor saw another vendor with it, they were like, oh, I need to go outside and grab a bite to eat. And,
mm-hmm. Yeah. I know Connor went out and spoke with them and they were very happy about it. They said the show went really well. I said, ironically, the sooner we can book next year's date and let them know, that's kind of how it works. You have to book as far out as you can. And then we can book a time. Like, we could tell them to come between 11 and 2 or something if we want, cool. Which would be really cool. So, yeah, we'll kind of work on that. But that was good.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a thing for me. The whole food thing was a thing, right? So it's great to have a food truck and let them offload that onto them, let them do their job, and provide it for people is great.
Mm-hmm. It was awesome food, too.
I didn't get to try any. Was it good?
Got the vampire killer sandwich.
That's what I heard. What?
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah?
Garlic and...
cool.
What's that Italian meat? Starts with
pastrami?
Yeah, pastrami.
Nice.
It's like 2 pieces of garlic bread with it. And like, oh, it's lots of cheese and stuff. Yeah.
That's very awesome. Cool.
A couple of times during that day where you're running around like a madman, all of a sudden get a little lightheaded, just like, oh, I should probably eat. Yeah.
Yeah.
We had our kitchen, our nice little safe space for the us to go and eat. And
exactly, yeah. And Will...
did a great job.
Member of the fellowship, he cooked up a mess of pulled pork for everyone. And then and Connor, bless his heart, he also put together some vegetarian burritos for any of the vegetarians in the crew. So, I mean, it was really... makes a big difference, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think the use of... like, we're kind of private talking now, but that's okay. People can listen in. But I think the idea of having that space for us in the kitchen was really, really helpful. Closing it off and letting us... you know, get people can go in there and take a break. That was really helpful.
Yeah. Well, this is a private conversation in the Funge, and that's why...
That's a safe space. We're good.
Safe space. Yeah. I don't know if I'd say safe. There's a lot of mimics.
Mimic and above goblins. Our head.
Yeah, beholder up there. Yeah,
beholder. Too funny.
Hmm. Yeah.
No, it was good. It was great. I'm very interested to talk to people and see what they felt about the duration, because we did boost it to that 9 hours if that was too long. I got a feeling the vendors might think it was too long. I'm interested to hear from them. But
yeah, the thing I'm interested... I mean, you know, because this is a... focused on game running, right?
Mm-hmm.
Podcast focused on game running. The games were very popular, right?
They were.
We ended up selling out
big time
prior to the opening of the show.
Yeah.
Selling out all the games. And so we ran 6 different games, right?
6 in total, yeah.
6 in total.
3 in the morning, 3 in the afternoon.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see what everyone else has to say about it, but... yeah. You know, I think we can run potentially even more next year.
I think so. And the length of the whole show, it's difficult because 3-hour game in the morning, yeah. 3-hour in the afternoon, so that's 6 hours. You need buffer on the front and the beginning of half hour at least, say. So that's 7 hours. And then you have to have a break in between kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So it's hard not to be 9 hours. Like, you could maybe push it to 8 and be able to do that. So that'll be interesting. Or you just run a whole bunch at the same time.
Yeah, a whole bunch at the same time.
You know, in 3 hours like that. So you could shorten the day, but we'll see. It'll be interesting to talk about it. But I think for all intents and purposes, it went well.
Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. I think 9's good. Good time.
Yeah. A lot of the vendors are really baked. I noticed at the end of the day, by the end of the day, they look pretty tired. But that's not uncommon. Like, I've done shows and it's easily that long. And you do it two, three days in a row.
Well, and especially if you're busy, right?
Right.
But you're absolutely right. Like, I used to work in high tech and...
yeah.
Did those trade shows, and you know, those were,
yeah,
you know, some of them were 12 hours, right?
Yeah.
And you would just be completely fried by the end of the day.
The hardest part, and to anybody out there who's never done like a vendor or been at a trade show or something, it really, the hardest part about it is saying the same thing over and over and over, because you get asked the same questions.
Yeah.
And it's trying to be generous with each person and say the answer to them with as much enthusiasm as did the very first time you said it. That, to me, is really the hardest part about doing any show. It's interesting.
And just like conventions are like very draining, right? Like,
yeah.
I used to do Calgary Expo every year and we do all 4 days, like start, like we would get there in the morning and we'd stay there till they shut the doors basically.
Totally.
And like, you're so wiped and it's just, what's like stimulation overload. Mm-hmm. Like, everywhere's just costumes and people and things to look at and like things going on. And
it's crazy.
Not even being a seller, just like being there will wipe you out. So
cosplay was good, wasn't it, this year? I think we had a number of people. I think we still have to do something about that. I know Connor sent me photos. They started taking photos of each person who was dressed up. and he numbered them and got the person's email address.
Oh, no way.
So I think we have to look at those and determine which ones we think were the best, and we got prizes to give out. So I think that's something still on our list of to-do.
Oh, awesome.
Well, I'm pretty sure there were a couple of people there from the same, couple of cosplayers from the same guild, so.
Yeah. You and Friendly Mike had the same
that was awesome. Pouch.
Same belt and pouch.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
It was funny.
That was awesome.
I love Mike's. That was
he looks so good.
Fantastic. Oh, yeah. He was a merchant.
There was a couple of times I looked over him when he was running his game, and when he was running his workshop, he had this huge big smile on his face. He just looked in his element. It was so awesome to see.
Yeah.
He was so excited.
I have to say, favorite cosplay for me, Megan's Goblin.
Oh my gosh.
She does a great job.
When you paint your entire self green.
It's pretty cool.
And, you know, and then she carved the like wood armor and stuff for the little upgrade from the
expo. I did like the gentleman. I think it was a gentleman. It was all in red and had, I don't know what that, if that was something I'm not aware of, but I thought they looked really cool. Yeah. They were really like.
I'm assuming that's some sort of like anime or.
I wonder if it's from something like that. Yeah. But I said, dude, you look amazing. And I said, would you like a button? I said, sure. So I put my hand out and they're like, the hands all over the place because they're masked. They could only see straight out. They couldn't see down. They couldn't find my hand. It was so cute. It was awesome.
They won the painting.
They did, didn't they?
Not the like main one, but they won the other prizes.
Yeah. What were your prizes in that?
Because
it was the three Fenris ones, right?
Yeah.
And the one trophy?
Yeah. And then the Kobold workshop paint. Starter kit.
Cool. What did you do them for? Like just like because one time you said we were gonna have different categories or something, didn't you, or something?
Yeah, it was like super scientific how we did it. So I told Courtney to pick two that gave her good vibes, and then I said I'd pick two that gave me good vibes.
Sick.
And then we just kind of agreed on one. And the guy that won was a younger guy, and he was in Chris's D&D game that day or whatever, and he came up to the table and asked if he could be in the paint competition even though he was in a D&D game. I was like, well, no, you'll be double booked, sorry. So okay, so he comes back an hour later, he's like, I would really like to be in the paint competition, like could I just bring it to the table? I'm like, man, who am I to tell you how to live your life? I was like, yeah, for sure. So we brought it to him, and we picked him because it looked awesome too. Like, it was so detailed.
So cool.
And he was doing two ArtCon things at the same time. That's like,
crazy.
That's amazing. So
yeah,
good for him.
Well earned.
That was awesome.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. They were a great player on the table too. They it was kind of funny. They were not rolling so hot with their die, and they said, "Oh, can you just excuse me for a second?" And then they came back after a couple of minutes and pulled out a brand new D20 that they started rolling with. And
did it work better?
It seemed to have a better effect.
Oh, yes.
But they were taking it all in stride. It looks like they everybody seemed to have a good time.
It was really fun to walk by and see. The games to me are always exciting because everyone's here like, yeah, everyone's excited and cheers or something that fun happened. And for me, that was really fun to see some of my terrain on the table and have people playing with it, because that just, it looked so cool when you looked at the tables with everyone around and all the excitement, the terrain there. And that to me really felt like what I envisioned what this could be like.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really fun.
Yeah, no, and I think that's a really great point. Like I could see on the periphery of the table, every once in a while, there would be people curious as to what was going on.
It drew people in, didn't it?
And that was because of the terrain. So, I mean, obviously for folks that weren't there. So I ran a pirate-themed campaign.
Yeah.
There was a big ship-to-ship battle, and Sean mentioned that he had built a couple of ships, and so he lent them to me for the show. And it just made a huge difference. Like, I can't tell you how much, like, real, actual terrain makes a difference on tables.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously... these role-playing games are super flexible, and you can play it as theater of the mind. And then you can start sort of stepping up to like having a grid paper on your table with like even just paper markers. And then there's tons of minis. I mean, we're in Jim's, Jim's Fungin here, and he's got literally hundreds of figures and some of them beautifully painted.
Definitely thousands.
It's crazy.
There's boxes filled over there.
But then to take it to that next level and actually have terrain, and that's why I don't think I've actually ever used any terrain in my games, but that's because they're all virtual.
Mm, yeah.
So it's really neat to actually be able to sit at the table and, I miss that visceral.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
The rolling of the plastic dice or the resin dice and the... really helped out.
I find for players, it helps them, like, imagine things better, too. Like, they see the thing or whatever and say there's, like, little... like a lamp or something outside, and they'll see that. Oh, I'm going to smash the lamp off there and like try to throw it at their feet and light them on fire. You know, it kind of gives them those ideas.
It does. Yeah. Because, I mean, you can think of it in your mind, but I think because you're not sharing your mind with everybody, it's hard to say, I'm going to do this. Where if there's something on front of them, it gives them an idea of something they can work with or interact with. And I tend to see the players just a little bit more engaged, which is fun.
Yeah. And I was thinking about this a little bit earlier, and it's not specifically about the using terrain on the table. But when we're talking about terrain and stuff like this, and you guys have talked about this previously on the show, describing terrain and describing the environment that players are in and really using those five senses to explain what it looks like can really, you know, it's a sort of next level of immersion. Because if you are doing theater of the mind, then you don't have like, you haven't built terrain or something like that, it can be sometimes hard for people to fully get into it.
Yeah, it's true.
Right? And by describing things like the way you were talking about the tundra, right? Like squishy. And if you're today, like all of these beautiful places that we saw and all of these amazing things that we saw, and you know, if you boil it down to, oh, you're walking through the woods. Okay, well, what type of woods?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Is it like the Blair Witch woods?
Yeah.
Is it like super thick, super dense? Is it deciduous, temperature, coniferous, temperature?
Does it smell like?
Smells. Yeah.
I find writing the five senses like on your DM screen is like a game changer. Always have that there. I always am looking at that.
I think we fall victim to being just lazy in a way. Do you know what I mean? You're trying to get the information across as fast as you can so people can do stuff. But if you can take that little bit of time to think about it and describe it a bit more, you're going to get so much more back to you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, you know what, guys? Why don't we take a little break there? Let's do a little pause and put something out to maybe John, our good friend, who gave us a video at the show. Did you guys see the video from John?
I never got to see it.
No, I think it only ran once or twice. So anyways, we'll have to have a look at that. So anyways, let's throw a little call out here to our good friend John, Tale of the Manticore, and maybe hear something he has to say.
Awesome.
Love you, John.
Are you looking for a D&D podcast with a dark side? Something more like Game of Thrones and less like Monty Python? Tale of the Manticore is part dark fantasy audio drama, part solo D&D RPG. There's no plot armor here. The dice make all the important decisions. Join me as I resurrect the excitement, wonder, and emotion of old-school D&D. Made for a mature audience, Tale of the Manticore is both a fiction and a game. It's the story where chaos rolls.
Look out! Random encounter!
Guys, we are back from our little break, and Jim has dug out a bunch of different manuals and different books here. And we decided we're just going to have some fun and roll some dice and do some random stuff.
Yeah, some AD&D books and some old school.
Love it. So Jim's going to be kind of leading us here through. He's the mastermind of what this craziness is going to be. So what do you got there, Chris?
I don't know. What version is this?
AD&D.
I've never seen this cover before.
Very cool.
This
And we got the Dungeon Master's Guide. More AD&D.
OG.
Oh, and the Dragonlance. So I thought I'd get some dwarven stuff in here.
Sick.
So I thought we could just make a little dwarven kind of themed encounter and just kind of
fun,
you know, show how fun that is to make up a counter on the spot, or you know,
love it.
All right, so I'm gonna roll a d12 to see kind of what the dwarves are dealing with here.
Perfect.
I'm not sure they could hear that roll.
I don't think they can hear that one either.
Yeah, it's a 10 again.
Imagine that. It's like magic.
So elves. Of course, that's what they're dealing with, right?
Elves.
Damn dirty elves.
Elves, the hated enemy of the dwarves.
That stands to reason. I like it. Okay.
All right. And they are using... We'll do... Sean, if you could roll a D100.
Do you have a real D100 or two tens?
Not a real one.
I have a player in my group right now that just loves rolling a D100. So it's like... roll. It goes on like 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah, I got one of those.
Before it finally stops, it's like, oh my god.
I think it does pick up the dice rolls.
Sick. Ready? 70.
Filter of love.
Filter of love.
Hmm.
What's a filter of love?
This is like a love potion, right?
Yeah.
So like whatever you drink it, then the first thing you see. Filter of love, and then do one more.
Okay. Ooh, that's 90, isn't it, Jim? 90, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah, 93.
Yep.
And then that's Wand of Secret Door and Trap Location. So it's kind of like, it's starting to sound like kind of a bit of a love story, like a, you know, star-crossed lovers, or, you know, like the...
Yes. Yes. I'm thinking of a specific story, and I can't remember what it was from.
Romeo and Juliet.
Maybe.
Oh, Jim's on the water.
Gosh, I saw it on some Netflix or Prime show. Oh, it was Avatar. It was Avatar. We're two...
the new one.
Anyways, I can't remember what it was, so I'm not even going to bother talking about it. So that was a great end to that story.
Was it the new one? The new Avatar?
Well, I mean, it's all original stuff, right? I just happened to watch it full all the way through with the...
Avatar's not original.
No.
I've seen Ferngully before. That's the original Avatar movie.
Ooh. Ouch.
Is that what you mean? Like
another Jim Hot take.
The Last Airbender.
Oh, sorry. I'm thinking the blue people Avatar.
Yeah. That's what I thought you meant, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I'm with you.
Sorry for the all of the incorrect...
There's a bit of controversy around, not or just fan like dislike on that, isn't it? Because that's the new... So I'm like, right, Avatar, the Airbender thing, whatever. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, because some people are very excited about a live-action one or something, I heard.
There's always...
Yeah, there is.
Detractors, and I liked it.
Yeah.
It was fun.
I'm just finally now getting around watching Cowboy Bebop, the live-action one. Yeah. I actually like it. And I mean, I loved the original anime stuff back in the day, but so many people are just against it. And there's only going to be one season because there's so many people who talk smack about it. I guess they're not going to do a second, but I actually think they did a pretty good job. It's not the same, but if I want the same, I'll watch the original. Like,
yeah.
You know, does it have to be the same? I don't know.
Yeah. We're talking today, the new Lord of the Rings comes out end of August.
No. Rings of Power, not Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
The new one comes
out
this August?
That's exactly what you were saying, right?
Yeah.
Really? Oh, wow. I thought we were waiting longer than that.
No, the second season, right?
Yeah.
The Rings of Power, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought I'd have to wait longer for that.
And they just okayed the Search for Gollum.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And that's directed by...
Peter Jackson?
No.
Zack Snyder.
No, yeah. No. Oh, God, I'm blanking. We even saw him at...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Who played Gollum again? I was forgetting his name.
And no, he's not directing. He's playing Gollum.
But I thought he's directing it as well.
Oh, really? Oh,
I could be wrong. Yeah. Somebody look
at
it.
I heard it was Michael Bay. Lots of explosions.
Blow everything up.
Yeah. Lots of Golem related explosions.
All right, knuckleheads. All right, Chris. What
DM's guide, so it's Advanced Dungeons & Dragons Dungeon Master's Guide, and I see the publishing date of it was 89. So I'm not sure what version that would make this. But
I think it's 2 still, isn't it?
I've never seen this cover.
I think it's before. Yeah, I don't have those books. I think it's before. It's before 3. I think that's version 2, isn't it? Still,
maybe.
Yeah, I don't know.
Anywho, and by the way, those last couple of roles that Sean was doing was in the OG beautiful. What is that? A Freet?
Yes, the Freet or Freety, I don't know how you pronounce it.
Cover.
Yeah, that's such a great cover.
Oh, this is...
Nothing beats it.
My jam.
Yeah.
So, wow.
How many hours did you stare at that cover when you were a kid, eh?
Yeah. So I'm rolling... Apparently, someone is getting a girdle of giant strength.
Nice. So
this is exciting. I did bring my glasses. 53.
Good for you, bud.
And that would give us a frost giant. So whoever gets the girdle. Strength rating 21.
Wow.
Bonus to hit plus 4. Damage plus 9. And look at this. There's a roll to open doors.
Not fun.
So that increases it to the...
it was a die 6 chance roll.
To open... No, it can't be a die 6 if it is. Or maybe it is, but...
I think it was a die 6.
It's a 17.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Chance to open I thought doors. It was die 6 back in the day. Could be wrong. Oh, yeah. I'm probably thinking that book, AD&D. Not that book over there. I think it changed.
Yeah, the number in parentheses is the number of chances out of 20 for the character to be able to force open a locked, barred, or magically held
sick
door.
Sick.
Only one attempt can be made per door. If it fails, no further attempts are permitted.
Period.
You can only try to open that door once, folks.
I love that.
It's an interesting conundrum, though, right? Mm. Like, how many times do you allow someone to try something?
And I think we're a little more lenient now with the rule sets now than what it used to be. I think a lot of the things in rule sets used to be very cut and dried. Like, you try it once and that's it. Or, you know, I think we're way more forgiving with stuff now in the rule sets that they have, which is cool. I guess it keeps the story going. But I think it used to be it was a little bit more rigorous back in the day. Like, think about, like, just to be a ranger, those presets you had to have. Mm-hmm. So I can remember being so stressed the night before to go and play a new campaign because I really wanted to be a ranger. And I mean, I remember sneaking in under the wire, like a couple of there was certain stats that had to be a certain number. And I remember just snuck in on it. It was a very low level ranger. And it's not so much of that now. It's a little bit easier to be anything you want to be kind of thing. It was kind of fun for those rules, I think.
Yeah. Okay. So what do we got there, Jim?
We need Sean to roll one more time.
Okay. More rolls.
Add one more thing into this.
That looks like a 33.
Footman.
A footman.
All right.
Okay.
Oh, wait. There's a cross reference here of how many are encountered. If you wanted to add that in.
Definitely
do.
Well, it's a D10 roll.
Do you want to roll? You haven't rolled yet, have you?
Yeah.
I'm sure. 10.
Good lord.
Right on the money.
So it's heavy footman. What is it? 10 to 60.
Ooh.
There's going to be a lot of trouble.
This is sounding cool.
10 to 60. So what's that? D6?
Then, yeah. Jim's going to roll a 6. 30 footmen.
Wow. Yeah.
30.
All right, so what you guys can't see is we have a bunch of books open in front of us from all different genres and ages and versions of D&D, which is fun, and we're just rolling a bunch of different tables and putting together some kind of crazy scenario. So Jim has all the numbers and stuff down, and why don't you let us know a little bit what we got going on.
So it's dwarves, so versus elves, or we don't have to do versus, but elves...
Do you want to do a roll and see if it's versus or not?
Yeah.
A 50-50 roll, or... I think low it's versus, high it's... An alliance?
Love story.
Low.
Versus.
Yeah.
Dwarves versus elves.
Yeah.
And so then there's a love story because, like, the love potion is to try and stop it being a versus. And maybe they're trying to...
Yeah, so we got filter of love in there.
Yep.
Wand of secret door and trap location.
That's cool.
Like, with the filter of love, I mean, that's kind of...
Trying to get in somewhere.
Frost giant girdle. So strength of 21, damage plus 9, roll to open doors, and 30 footmen.
So they have to get in somewhere. They have to get into somewhere so much they have a wand, and they have this crazy strength girdle that they have if they have to break a door in or something. Like, there's something very important about getting in somewhere.
Mm. I'm kind of thinking it's like the elves are bringing in like an army, like 30 footmen, to get into like the dwarves...
enclave or...
Like, yeah, wherever they're hid out.
In the mountains. Because we're in the mountains.
Yeah.
they're going to dump a filter of love, maybe in the Dwarven King's mouth while he's sleeping, so then when he wakes up, sees an elf, he'll have a love for elves. Maybe let them in for some gold or something, or...
So maybe there is a war between the dwarves and the elves are trying to stop the war by actually bringing them together. So it's like a... It could even be like a rebellious group of elves coming in and doing this who have seen enough devastation, and this is their mission to try and end this through a different means.
like marrying the
Mm-hmm. The so they're sneaking in the elven, a beautiful elven maiden that will be shown to the king, and he'll fall madly in love with her and bring the warring nations together.
What's the giant frost giant girdle, though? What's that have to do with all of this?
Could be a door backup, like we said, but if you have a wand, you're getting in because you got the wand. So maybe there's something that they have to, they know they've got to get past.
Well, maybe the king of the dwarves wears that. Right? We can't just assume that they're successful in getting the potion.
You're right.
Maybe that's who they have to fight, if, or one of the dwarven champions or something along those lines. From my standpoint, I'm biased. I hate elves.
Do you really?
Yes.
Hate? Wow.
That's strong.
Yeah, that's a strong
Chris Hot Take.
How's it feel?
I've never been a big fan of them.
Really? That's interesting.
Dwarves
that's cool.
Any day of the week, for sure.
Yeah.
Even in Baldur's Gate, I made a dwarf.
Oh, yeah. For sure, dwarves, yeah. But
I like elves. I've played a lot of elves over the years.
I like elves too, but not as much as I like dwarves. That's like, I think you like dwarves the most then, though. There's like some heavy dwarven blood in you if you play elves like that.
Yeah. We played with a guy, Dwayne, and all Dwayne was is dwarves. All he ever played, he had his piles of loonies and toonies that he had stacked up on in his bedroom.
Yeah.
And he had little Lego dwarves that he made sitting on top of all these stacks. He just loved dwarves. And he pretty much played the same character every single time. Like, it was no change. That was just his jam.
I play with a guy like that too.
That's
like
cool.
Every character, almost every character is a dwarf.
Yeah.
And he plays them all exactly the same. They're always rogues and
just
thieves and criminals. Yeah.
Really? The criminal. I mean, sorry, we're getting a little bit off topic here.
That's okay. But,
that's what this is all about.
Welcome to the show.
I kind of like the idea of, and this is maybe reflected in my Baldur's Gate character, right? He's a dwarven cleric.
Hmm.
Right? I really like the old school,
like
the idea of a cleric bashing somebody over the head in the head
big
with a big mace, carrying a big shield, and bash.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I get that.
Yeah, I made a Duergar dwarf on my Baldur's Gate.
Oh, yeah?
Sick.
Yeah.
That's cool.
It's funny because I was playing with my buddy who doesn't play D&D, but he was in the military. He's very tactical. Usually when we play games, he's like way better at combat and stuff than I am. And then we go to these Shadowlands. There's all these shadows. And I'm a cleric. I'm like, oh, yeah. So I start just wrecking house. He's like, oh, my God. He's like, you're amazing. How'd you know how to do that? And I'm like, man, I've played so much D&D. And, like, I know what clerics do. Like, yeah. I just remember he was so impressed because I just started obliterating, like, shadow race or whatever.
That's
right?
Fun.
Yeah.
That's funny. Okay, so we've got then this group of elves.
Yep, your favorite.
Breakaway group of elves.
Yep.
High elves or wood elves?
Roll it. Yeah, you don't ask a question. You just roll the
spicy.
Dice. High elves is going to be high.
Yeah.
Gocked.
Not using a dice tray. That's, low.
Low.
The wood elves.
Wood elves?
Thank God it was wood elves because I'm like... I feel like high elves would never bring themselves to partnership with the
It doesn't
dwarves.
Seem that way. So that's good. Okay, wood elves?
So it doesn't seem like a partnership.
Well, some sort of agreement.
Yeah.
Okay, so then we've got this breakaway group of wood elves who have decided that in order to end the war, or bring an end to hostility, they're going to... force feed, quote unquote, a filter of love to the king of the or the leader of this dwarf band.
Yep.
To force him into marriage with one of the daughters of the
Elven King.
Elven King, yeah. Oh, and we can even say that it was one of the daughters of the Elven King. So the Elven King is not for this. The daughter is the leader or
there
one of the leaders of the rebellion.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And they've brought 30 footmen
or
henchmen along to help out on this raid.
I think that sounds sick. Like, that would be a fun thing to play.
So that's also okay. We made that. So now how do you start this as a dungeon master? What quests do you, or like how do you guide your characters into this story now? They got to escort the elves, right? To the,
like, do you start, like, are you right at the foot of the mountain, ready to go in, or are you leading up to it? Like where do you think you would like to start something like this?
That's an interesting.
I'd say question. Probably in the woods. I'm always just, you guys know taverns and towns and stuff. I always let my characters or my players like load up in town. It's like, hey, if you guys want to buy anything, like,
yeah.
So I know that's my favorite part, when you buy a grappling hook or something, then yeah. It comes in handy and you're like, yes, I'm so glad I bought that grappling hook in town before we left. Like, I told you guys that wasn't a waste of gold.
I think it's kind of fun in some ways to think that we're just like throwing him into it.
Oh, yeah, you know, like a movie.
Like a movie, right? The movie opens and boom, it's like credits have rolled, giving you a feeling of what's going on. And then boom, they're at the base of this mountain ready to go. Like, that'd be pretty crazy.
What's it called? Cold open?
A cold opening, yeah.
Yeah, cold open.
Yeah. That's how Gentleman Game Master, Malcolm, like, starts his oh my god, like, I play a couple games where he's DM, and if you feel like you're playing in a movie, like, he starts it like that, and he makes, like a introduction video or whatever, so it's, music, and it's, like, talking, and, like, shows your character, and, like, has little stuff, and then that's how it starts. He's like, there's arrows flying over your head, and this is happening, and this, and, like, what are you doing? You're like, oh my god, like,
was that the Christmas guy?
Yeah, that was cool. And then just another time we just like had a game, and yeah, it was awesome.
Sick.
That's neat. And I think it's gonna really depend on if you're doing like a one shot,
yes, or 100%.
If it's a campaign. I mean, obviously if it's a campaign, they've reached this this point
where these things. Yeah, you build it up a little bit more, I think, right?
Yeah. And the one shots can be you can do it any way you want, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you can... You're right, though, Jim. Like,
always.
As usual. That can be... Like, and you want to make sure your players have... Do the things that are fun to them.
Yeah.
Right? And you're right. Shopping.
Yep.
Right? Like, I want to try... Like, my guys are always... we're looking for health potions.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Just in case.
Yeah.
Just in case. But... It's funny, because, you know, we're sitting in front of these old books, and I'm super jealous, because I want to get all of these books. But, you know, when one of you, I don't know which one of you mentioned, but, like, the Dungeoneers pack, right, where, you know, it had, like, what were those things you throw on the ground that people step on?
Like the ball bearings or whatever?
Yeah, ball bearings and caltrops and all those things. And
four-sided dice.
It was so... it was even just, like... You know, when I was a kid, thinking about this stuff, right? Like, what adventures would I go on, and what things would I have in the pack?
Yeah.
Stuff like that, and super cool.
This would be really actually a very fun adventure to do with brand new characters, like a brand new game at the very beginning, and having like, you know, four or five of your players. Well, you're four or five of the henchmen. You know what I mean? Like, all the big people are big people, because I love stuff about that with a game where you can. You got first level characters. Well, how's the first level character, like, you know, the leader here, the female leader? Or how's the first level character, like, the dwarven king, or like, whatever? But it's like, those, what do we have, 30 henchmen thing? That's perfect. Like, first level characters could easily be one of these henchmen in the kind of the helping army, and then around them have all these big level characters that you as a DM can do stuff with and have them having high level adventures while the guys are kind of coming in around them, which would be really fun to play that as a, you know, those guys kind of in the background trying to help out.
Oh, yeah.
It would be cool.
And then what kind of wrenches would you put in their plans with the Dwarven guys? Because you'd have to put something in the, you know, this can't go off without a hitch.
I think you'd get into the, start getting into it, and it's way more going on inside the mountain than you realized.
Mm-hmm.
So environment issues, things you're going to have to deal with. There's got to be a Balrog, probably too much for them. But, you know, some large creature that you didn't realize was there protecting, and then that's a fight and... You know, things like that. So like you said, it can't just be as simple as this is what we do, but maybe these things that kind of really challenge them.
Yeah, I wonder if that that wand of secret door...
Mm-hmm.
Was it secret door finding, or...?
It was wand of secret door and trap location.
Okay, so it can find them.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily mean get them open. Get them open, right? Like, there can be wards and dwarven magic...
Yeah. And is it a is it a number of charges? Like, is it indefinite, or how many charges does it have, too? So you can really mess with players, too, and how it has, you know, four charges, but there's five or six times they're going to have to use it, and so they can, you know, screw you up type of thing.
Yeah. But I actually really like that idea of what you said there about not a Balrog, obviously, because that's a bit too much.
That's silly.
But
a baby Balrog.
So they don't, the elves don't know what the layout of the place is. They find a door.
Yeah.
And they open it. It's not a door you're supposed to open.
No.
Right? It's keeping something bad inside.
The dwarves know not to go
suddenly,
in there.
Yeah, and suddenly half of these 30 henchmen, right? Because 30 is a lot to deal with.
Yeah.
But suddenly they're toast and your characters are getting chased.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the fire elemental that heats their giant forge.
Oh, yes. Yeah. That'd be awesome.
And it just wreaks terror, even for the dwarves, because these guys will be let out. Yeah. And all of a sudden, everyone's having to deal with this madness.
Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. I'm thinking like Calcifer on steroids, like just a monster of a fire demon.
That'd be sick.
Gets out and just starts wrecking house.
That'd be cool. And all of a sudden, everything's on fire. So you've added this element. Everywhere you're going, things are burning. And
yeah.
See?
And you put gold in line on the door and stuff. Like, let the players open it. Be like, oh, you guys open it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. You could have a lot of fun with stuff like this. And I think something really important, too, like we've said this before as well, is that if that's something you want to unleash on them, it doesn't have to be a specific door. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's at some point, they're going to open a door that is going to release that, because that really helps push the story forward, which is a DM's choice to do something like that.
Just come on. Broom closet, close enough. fire demon.
It's happening.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the things that I think I've converted over to homebrew now.
Mm.
Because I find that, for the last 3 years, I've been using like good campaigns, right?
Yeah.
Like
they're
Empire
great.
Of the Ghouls. That was a pretty fun campaign. A lot of political intrigue, which was a little bit beyond what I was interested in. And,
right.
The Ghosts of Saltmarsh.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's all like sort of cast down for you already. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Jim, what you just said about, or I'm not sure who said it now because I'm tired, but about like, whichever, like the door doesn't have to be the door.
Doesn't
it
matter.
Can be a broom closet. Yeah, like, broom closet, close enough. Yes. There's a demon in there. And he's mad because he's been stuck in this broom closet.
Yeah. Your homebrew allows you to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And no, again, like we're saying, no shade on modules. We've all used them. They're amazing. They're great. But you do get pretty locked in. It's hard to move stuff around there because they're so interlinked and there's a certain, you know, flow to them.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're in your own world, you can adjust on the fly very easily.
I find you like the lore when you make a homebrew, when you're at work and you're zoned out, you're thinking about your homebrew. When you're out for a run or working out, you're thinking about your homebrew. And like that knowledge stays in your head. If I read something in a book, it's in one ear, out the other. Mm-hmm. Like I'm not going to.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, and you can just make things work that, oh, you know what, I'm going to add this in because I just thought of it and this element is going to work and it can be a really, really nice thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Well, awesome.
This was fun.
Guys. That was a lot of fun.
It was. Good job, Jim. Jim kind of came up with this one on the fly. It was his idea to do it and it was awesome.
So this podcast rolls just us on the fly.
One of these days we have to play one of these things. Like we keep coming up with these different ideas and things that we've never played any of them. We should do one time.
Yeah.
That'd be really fun.
Definitely.
I want to say a big thanks to having Chris and just a big thanks to us being here in the room together. This is beautiful.
Yeah, thanks for coming, guys.
It's awesome.
It's a little chilly down here because I couldn't put on the fireplace because it messed with the sound. But
yeah, no, this was like super interesting. Like it's... I've got to say, and for anybody out there who might be listening, you know, it's just an opportunity to get together with your friends and talk about the system and how things work together, and even doing exercise like this in seeing how other people think through ideas, right? It's very, very useful.
It really is.
Like, I know we've said like 100 times, but yeah, if you're ever in like a roadblock or something, like talk to another DM. Like right now, I'm just, all I can think about is... broom closet fire demon encounter.
You start bouncing ideas off each other and it just grows. You get excited and it's awesome.
Yeah.
And your players too, because some of my best ideas come from when my players go, oh, imagine if this was the next thing to happen. Yeah. And I'm like, wow, that's a way better idea than what I was going to do. So that's what's going to happen.
Totally. And they get jazzed when that happens. Yeah. It's cool.
The player paranoia. Yes. They're like, oh man, it's like, I got a weird feeling that dragons are going to come. You're like, all right, like, sounds good.
Good.
I actually had to specifically change a one shot I was doing with my my players once because they had said, oh, you know what? I can't remember what it was. Like they thought that the bad guy was going to be a changeling sort of thing.
Mm.
And that's what I had actually planned on doing. But I was like, you know what? If I do that, they're never, ever going to trust an NPC again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so I didn't want to do that because that would just like reinforce the stereotype. And then, you know, it's hard having interactions in the world
with
players. So anyways.
It's awesome. Well, I guess maybe we should end the show off. We always do when we have a guest is maybe put the guest on the spot and ask them what our next episode is going to be about.
Should have knew this was coming, Chris.
I should have.
You're the lore master.
You're the lore master. Listen to every episode. You know.
Yeah.
Should have known this was coming. Okay, so Mike had said tropes. Courtney had said.
I don't remember
what Courtney had said. It was a good one.
Something about our interest in something, how we keep it.
Oh, the creative process.
Right? Was that it? Yeah.
Yeah. We've talked a little bit about modules and things like that. What are some of your best resources for thinking through fantasy items?
Good. So write that down, Jim.
Yeah.
So like we were talking about the DM's guide here that I used to stare at for hours upon hours, you know, when I was a young lad. Yep. And the amazing old school artwork in it, right? That really...
Paladin Hell, that's the one for me.
Best resources through thinking.
Just to get your fantasy juices
fantasy
rolling,
ideas
I guess.
And ideas, that's sick.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Chris.
No, thank you guys. This has really been a... super honor to come out to ArtCon and come out to I'm so happy we were able to come up to visit Jim and that Sean, you know, Sean works himself to the bone on all of the things that he does with ArtCon, Ardnor Minis, and he posts like a madman and he's very committed to everyone. So to be able to have him come up and join us for a vacation, take a break, I was super stoked.
It feels like a holiday. It's so great.
Yeah, I'm glad that I could get Sean a nice relaxing holiday by dragging him through the mountains for 2 days with like just nonstop all day adventure.
Yeah, we did a lot of walking. It was awesome.
I hope it just recharges your soul anyways. Your body, you'll be fine. You'll get back. You can sleep on the couch for a day
No, this is amazing. And like I said, it's so much to think about. Like it has been just so many... If we're talking about game stuff, like what you're saying, Chris, like this trip has been that. Like there's a bunch of really cool things going through my head about how to incorporate some of the stuff we saw into game.
Yeah.
Lookouts of towns.
Lookouts. I'm enamored with the water ripping through the stone and how working some of that into a game would be sick.
But. Jim and I were talking about there was at the Athabasca Falls there was a tree that had fallen on top of the on top of the falls. We were saying, oh, what's the difficulty class of getting across that?
Right.
Chris said 15. I said 40.
but I mean, this is a great example of something that you look at it and you go like, and you talk about it in the game and you're like, oh yeah, it's a DC 15. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of just a throwaway thing. But if you really stop and think about it, like, shit, you know, if you screw, like the logs will be wet, if you screw up, you know.
Consequences are huge.
Yeah. But you also want your players to have fun, so you got to dock some DC back for that.
Totally.
Yeah. Anyways.
Awesome. Well, thanks, guys. It's been a blast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. We'll chat soon and see each other again.
Yeah.
Right on.
Right. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Love you guys. Bye.
Bye.
Well done, you. You've made it to the end of the podcast. You are a bold adventure to be sure.
Remember to fill your wire skin and to have your blade sharpened at the blacksmith's before departing.
Thanks for listening. Please subscribe to our podcast to be notified of new 13-sided die adventures. And don't forget to tell your friends about the silly fools talking about D&D.
13-sided die has been brought to you by Sean and Jim.
Executive produced by Sean and Jim.
Mini painting by Sean and Jim.
Engineered by Sean and Jim.
Goblin torture device by Sean and Jim.
Conceptualized by Sean and Jim. Please note, no goblins were harmed in the making of this podcast.